Greetings, benevolent viewers, and welcome to Animal World, Our Co-Inhabitants. Today's show features the second part of a three-part series on the thoughtful, classic short story, A Dog's Tale, by U.S. author, humanitarian, and outspoken animal advocate, Mark Twain. This fine work, published in 1903, is written from the perspective of a loyal canine companion named Eileen. Mark Twain's love of our animal friends is evident from his newspaper articles that condemned animal cruelty, travel books that featured his observations on animals he encountered on his journeys, and novels that included animal characters. We now continue with our reading of A Dog's Tale. Previously, the pup Eileen, after having spent a delightful childhood with her mother, was sold and taken away when fully grown. In tears, her mummy bid her farewell.
In memory of me, when there is a time of danger to another, do not think of yourself, think of your mother, and do as she would do.
Keeping her mother's love and her insightful words in heart, Eileen headed to face a new life on her own.
Such a charming home, my new one. A fine, great house with pictures and delicate decorations and rich furniture and no gloom anywhere, but all the wilderness of dainty colors lit up with flooding sunshine. And the spacious grounds around it and the great garden, oh, greensward, and the noble trees and flowers, no end. And I was the same as a member of the family. And they loved me and petted me and did not give me a new name, but called me by my old one that was dear to me because my mother had given it to me, Eileen Mavourneen. She got it out of a song, and the Grays knew that song and said it was a beautiful name. Mrs. Gray was 30 and so sweet and so lovely, you cannot imagine it. And Sadie was 10 and just like her mother. Just a darling, slender little copy of her, with auburn tails down her back and short frocks. And the baby was a year old, and plump and dimpled and fond of me, and never could get enough of hauling on my tail and hugging me and laughing out its innocent happiness. And Mr. Gray was 38, and tall and slender and handsome, a little bald in front, alert, quick in his movements, businesslike, prompt, decided, unsentimental, and with that kind of trim, chiseled face that just seems to glint and sparkle with frosty intellectuality. He was a renowned scientist. I do not know what that word means, but my mother would know how to use it and get effects. She would know how to depress a rat terrier with it and make a lapdog look sorry he came. But that is not the best one. The best one was laboratory. My mother could organize a trust on that one that would skin the tax collars off the whole herd. The laboratory was not a book or a picture or a place to wash your hands in, as the college president's dog said. No, that is the lavatory. The laboratory is quite different and is filled with jars and bottles and electrics and wires and strange machines. And every week, other scientists came there and sat in the place and used the machines and discussed and made what they called experiments and discoveries. And often I came too and stood around and listened and tried to learn for the sake of my mother and in loving memory of her, although it was a pain to me as realizing what she was losing out of her life and I gaining nothing at all. For try as I might, I was never able to make anything out of it at all. Other times, I lay on the floor in the mistress's workroom and slept, she gently using me for a footstool, knowing it pleased me, for it was a caress. Other times, I spent an hour in the nursery and got well tousled and made happy. Other times, I watched by the crib there when the baby was asleep and the nurse was out for a few minutes on the baby's affairs. Other times, I romped and raced through the grounds and the garden with Sadie till we were tired out, then slumbered on the grass in the shade of a tree while she read her book. Other times, I went visiting among the neighbor dogs, for there were some most pleasant ones not far away, and one very handsome and courteous and graceful one, a curly-haired Irish setter by the name of Robin Adair, who was a Presbyterian like me and belonged to the Scotch minister. The servants in our house were all kind to me and were fond of me, and so, as you see, mine was a pleasant life. There could not be a happier dog that I was, nor a gratefuler one. I will say this for myself, for it is only the truth. I tried in all ways to do well and right, and honor my mother's memory and her teachings, and earn the happiness that had come to me as best I could. By and by came my little puppy, and then my cup was full. My happiness was perfect. It was the dearest little waddling thing, and so smooth and soft and velvety, and had such cunning little awkward paws, and such affectionate eyes, and such a sweet and innocent face. And it made me so proud to see how the children and their mother adored it and fondled it, and exclaimed over every little wonderful thing it did. It did seem to me that life was just too lovely to.
For a time, Eileen lived a joyful, pleasant life in her new home. But then an event occurred that completely changed her life. We'll find out what happened after these brief messages. Please stay tuned to Supreme Master Television. Welcome back to Animal World, Our Co-Inhabitants, featuring a reading of Mark Twain's classic story, A Dog's Tale. With her new family, Eileen was living a cheerful, happy life. But as the warmth of summer faded and autumn quietly passed, an unexpected event occurred.
Then came the winter. One day, I was standing at watch in the nursery. That is to say, I was asleep on the bed. The baby was asleep in the crib, which was alongside the bed, on the side next to the fireplace. It was a kind of crib that had a lofty tent over it, made of gauzy stuff that you can see through. The nurse was out, and we two sleepers were alone. A spark from the wood fire was shot out, and it lit on the slope of the tent. I suppose a quiet interval followed. Then, a scream from the baby awoke me, and there was that tent flaming upward toward the ceiling. Before I could think, I sprang to the floor in my fright, and in a second was halfway to the door. But in the next half second, my mother's farewell was sounding in my ears, and I was back on the bed again. I reached my head through the flames and dragged the baby out by the waistband, and tugged it along, and we fell to the floor together in a cloud of smoke. I snatched a new hold and dragged the screaming little creature along and out the door and around the bend of the hall, and was still tugging away, all excited and happy and proud, when the master's voice shouted,
"Begone, you cursed beast!"
And I jumped to save myself, but he was furiously quick, and he chased me up, striking furiously at me with his cane, I dodging this way and that in terror, and at last, a strong blow fell upon my left foreleg, which made me shriek and fall, for the moment helpless. The cane went up for another blow, but never descended, for the nurse's voice rang wildly out,
"The nursery's on fire!"
And the master rushed away in that direction, and my other bones were saved. The pain was cruel, but no matter. I must not lose any time. He might come back at any moment. So I limped on three legs to the other end of the hall, where there was a dark little stairway leading up into a garret where old boxes and such things were kept, as I heard say, and where people seldom went. I managed to climb up there. Then I searched my way through the dark among the piles of things and hid in the secretest place I could find. It was foolish to be afraid there, yet still I was so afraid that I held in and hardly even whimpered, though it would have been such a comfort to whimper, because that eases the pain, you know. But I could lick my leg, and that did some good. For half an hour, there was a commotion downstairs, and shoutings and rushing footsteps, and then there was quiet again. Quiet for some minutes, and that was grateful to my spirit, for then my fears began to go down. And fears are worse than pains, oh, much worse. Then came a sound that froze me. They were calling me by name, hunting for me. It was muffled by distance, but that could not take the terror out of it. And it was the most dreadful sound to me that I had ever heard. It went all about everywhere down there, along the halls, through all the rooms, in both stories, and in the basement and the cellar. Then outside and farther away. Then back and all about the house again, and I thought it would never, never stop. But at last it did. Hours and hours after the vague twilight of the garret had long ago been blotted out by the black darkness. Then in that blessed stillness, my terrors fell little by little away, and I was at peace and slept. It was a good rest I had, but I woke before the twilight had come again. I was feeling fairly comfortable, and I could think out a plan now. I made a very good one, which was to creep down, all the way down the back stairs, and hide behind the cellar door, and slip out and escape when the iceman came at dawn, while he was inside filling the refrigerator. Then I would hide all day and start my journey when night came. My journey to, well, anywhere where they would not know me and betray me to the master. I was feeling almost cheerful now. Then suddenly I thought, why, what would life be without my puppy? That was despair. There was no plan for me. I saw that. I must stay where I was. Stay and wait and take what might come. It was not my affair. That was what life is. My mother had said it. Then the calling began again. All my sorrows came back. I said to myself, the master will never forgive. I did not know what I had done to make him so bitter and so unforgiving, yet I judged it was something a dog could not understand, but which was clear to a man and dreadful.
Sitting in the dark, with her soft heart pounding in suspense, the familiar voices sounded distant, and the future seemed unknowable to the faithful canine. Why were they calling her in such a frantic voice? Precious viewers, join us again next Saturday for the third and final segment of our three-part series on A Dog's Tale by celebrated author and animal advocate Mark Twain. Thank you for being with us today on Animal World, Our Co-Inhabitants. Up next is enlightening entertainment after noteworthy news. May loving kindness always be your guide.
For more details, please see www.SupremeMasterTV.com/AW.